Oui, oui, sur mon agenda, et là, agenda, on a l'ami. So, I'm going to request members to look at the agenda and confirm it. Yes, ma'am?
Can I just like to ask if one day would be enough to meet with all the entities? Because I know in the past we've done it in 2 or 3 or 4 days, and that was even a struggle. Or it's just the only time that were made available for us, or can we meet on other days also?
I think the challenge is the challenge that Parliament has on this. Because we're supposed to adopt the budget by the 30th, and we've got only 2 days in the program. We can actually apply for one for us to be briefed by the researcher on the actual budget itself. So we don't have more days. But I think in future we could consider to have those the briefing and give them enough time for all the even the entities that we have. So I hope even today's meeting would actually assist us to understand more. But you are the veteran of this committee. So we don't have time, we're under pressure. So we just have to comply. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's, I think, understandable. It's also pretty at the same time, because we only see the department or maybe the entities twice a year, and this is one opportunity, so but it's a less opportunity, it's understandable. And then, Madam Chair, there's also another urgent issues from the department itself, and I would like to ask your permission if we can ask maybe on next week, when the entities come, and we will give you information. I'm just waiting for it to be printed on the Marine Living Resources. The Avalon fishing rights has come to an end. It will come to an end in July, and there was a proposal that we would like to send to you, and I will give you the copy as soon as it arrives. To ask you if we, next week, when you see the fishing owner on here, the Marine Living Resources Fund. If that means that if we can be briefed on that specifically next week, but I will send you the information before that, but I just wanted you to be aware of that. We are quite worried that the fishing rights will come to the end of the abalone fishes at the end of July, and there is nothing, as far as we can understand, on the table from the partner's side to assist with that.
Okay, I think maybe let's not preempt the department. We expect them to brief us and work about the looking at the legacy report and those outstanding issues, and then they'll then even go into the draft plan and other related documents that they are supposed to were supposed to process in terms of the rules of the house. It is when we are not being briefed that we will actually ask the department to brief us. Is it fine, ma'am? Okay. So, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to all members and all stakeholders of the presenter. I think, Chairperson, the issue of concern is how MEDA are approaching to the proposal committee. And if we may just be able to take note on those issues. I believe we do have a secretary and we do have a chairperson in the portfolio committee that things can be sent to all through the chamber office and then brought back into the portfolio committee. And whomever has concerns should be sending those concerns to the secretary of the speaker so that they find their way into the portfolio committee. Not just for issues which have been raised here. and we preempt things that are upcoming or yet to be discussed. So if we stick to that procedure, we'll be able to all get the information as it comes.
I think it's agreeable. If there are issues that need to be raised, let me inform in time those that are preparing the agenda so that every member can know what is going to be discussed in the meeting. Because it will even help us to prepare, to make our reflections before we come to the meeting. So I think it's a great proposal. Thank you. So let's we have noted one apology from Honorable Sirigane. So do we have any apology?
No, Chairperson, there is no other apology from my side.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if it won't be proper to just to get the reasons to why. The president is not in the meeting. It helps. So that you know it's because there are discussions. So that if this discussion, this meeting is clashing with another meeting, we are able to correct the situation immediately. I know there are members who do have our meeting that attend every day. So that we have to be a bit clarified so that we tackle those issues as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the same breath, I think I am also affected because this meeting at 10 o'clock in another portfolio, and I have not sorted out the issue of a visiting member or invited member or an alternate, because I don't have an idea who determines what alternate is, the committee, how, and so I hear that at 10 o'clock there's some meeting. So I just want to be interested, maybe that's something we can clarify.
Okay, I think with regard to the apology just says he will not be able to attend the meeting. Nothing. So we don't know why he's not attending. But I think with regard to the clashing, I think because Parliament has tried to allocate committees days and were given Tuesday as agriculture. And if other they put the same committees which affect the same members, then it's a problem with other, because I thought the allocation of days for members or for committees would then be based on committees to avoid clashes. So, but I still believe it can be corrected. I think because today's meeting is just for us to get a briefing in terms of the leaders' report and analysis of the sector and just to familiarize ourselves with the content of what has been happening in the committee. Then later on, in the next meeting, that is when we're going to engage department. So we thought we should actually have a knowledge from the officials who were dealing, who were working with the previous committee, so that we don't have to avoid situation where things would end up will be stuck. Because if we don't get the feedback on where the committee was, we might start in the process, because the issues will then be raised even and if it's not coordinated, we will not move forward. So and with your permission, I think at some point we'll release them, because it's just for a process.
Okay. as members of this community. Because we don't have time, I move from that premise that the year is gone. We don't have time, we must be on time in meetings and avoid via populate coming to town. You get what I mean? Not be very straightforward, precise, and all that. To manage time properly. I think it will help us. You know, because we really don't have time. So we'll have to deal with those issues first. And even this thing, I know it's complicated. This thing of umuntu mazato, but why is he or she not coming to the meeting? And if it's the success of four members, let that be very clear when they write up all the positions. They must start prejudices. I think for me this is a very important meeting because that's why we must, it's why we must understand each other from the onset.
Well, thank you,
Ed.
I think it is correct that we have to agree in terms of how we move forward as a committee. And in future, I think all members need to be notified from Secretariat. So they must give a reason why they are not here. And otherwise, apologies will not be accepted if there is no reason. And members actually agree whether they agree with the apology or not. Thank you very much. I'm now going to ask members to look at the minutes and we'll start with the... I assume members agree with the agenda. So let's look at the minutes and we allow members to correct if they think we've been misinterpreted. Can we or get endorsement of the minutes? And we follow honorable.
I advise that we accept the minutes. That's true and correct.
Okay. Any second?
I'd like to second that we adopt the minutes.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Thank you. The minutes adopted. We'll now go into the presentation. So, we'll have to look at there is a draft program. This program is mainly focusing on the time that we allocated looking at the pressure that Parliament has to adopt the budget. So, we were given only Tuesday to meet. So, because we have realized that there is no space where we would get the refresh analysis, we then apply that we actually have 3 days to look at the analysis of the of all the documents that the department has submitted. So, can we get the members to adopt the program? Right.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the draft program as said before us, and I would like to highlight to members that Thursday, the 3rd of July, 1400 hours to 1600, we have been in session, as you may.
Particularly look at that, so we don't have people not attending.
Thank you. Okay,
but we don't have any other choice. But I'll go to you, my coach, that you must be here with us. Yes, so and you can apologize to another person.
No, we are here.
Okay. Thank you. Second ask for the adoption, ma'am?
I propose that I second this chair, although I just made reference in the beginning, I don't think it is enough time to really you only do the work that you're supposed to do. So, Jesus, when I would work with the Bible also say that I think even after the adoption of the babies, we must look at our program and see if we can't get the entities back to make sure that we properly do what we were supposed to do basically next week. So that we understand, we all understand these entities. I think it's important just to feed back from the previous committee that we did not spend enough time. Those people in our programs were also extremely full on the entities, and I think, you know, we really need to look into that.
Okay, ma'am, I think it was noted your concern, and it's our wish, all of us, that we should have enough time to deal with the actions of committees. You wanted to know something? Okay. Thank you very much. So we're now going into the presentation. We'll get the presentation of the legacy report, and the legacy report will include the outstanding issues and the analysis of the sector that we are going to work on. So we should not get hired to introduce ourselves, particularly officials, so that we can use to the names. As we are going to present, please introduce your name and remind us what is your responsibility. Thank you very much. Can we then have, will be led by the committee, the content advisor of the presentation. Okay, the secretary will be there. Okay, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members, and support staff, and the colleagues from the department. As the chairperson has said in our program for today, that the main purpose of this meeting is information sharing meeting. For the members who are supposed to brief the members on what has been happening in the past of term parliament. My name is Albertina Kakada. I'm the Deputy Secretary of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. My role as a committee secretary, I provide procedural advice to the committee. I also do organize the overall coordination of the committee activities, starting from the meeting as a team, as a support staff with the chairperson, to committee meetings, organize the committee meeting, organize oversight visits for the committee, study tours, workshops, and so on. So I'm the person who's responsible for the overall coordination of the committee, as the committee secretary. My other role, chairperson and honorable members, is to ensure that I develop the program of the committee. When we are developing the program of the committee, we are being guided by the parliamentary program and the focus areas that we normally get from the House Chairperson. As you can see, when the Chairperson was changing that program, I consider those areas. My other role, honorable members and chairperson, is to monitor the budget of the committee in consultation with the chairperson. Whatever I do, members and the person, I do in consultation with the chairperson. I must have the approval from the chairperson. I don't just do things on my own. I also monitor the budget of the informed chairperson. We have so much budget. We have spent so much, so we are left with so much. I also produced members the minutes and records of the committee. I also facilitate implementation of the committee decision in this area, I'll make an example. In the past parliament, there was a decision taken by the committee at that time that the Mulhafam must be disbanded as an entity. I'm not sure how the system protocol is going to reflect on that, but what I am going to do, I have to, the department should come and brief the committee on the progress in that regard, so that we will ensure that the decisions are implemented. I also do record keeping for the committee, chairman and honorable members. All our minutes and reports, I save them. If anyone wants to have access to those documents, I do have all on my system and also in parliamentary website. There are very important documents in the members of the meeting, then they are posted and recorded because they reflect whatever decision that was taken, even by the committee. So they are very important documents. And they are only official documents once they are adopted by the committee. Before that, they are not an official, they are not accessible to anybody, only the members and the committee is supposed to. But after we have prepared the minutes or the report, they are the official of the committee. Chair, as we already explained that we are going to present to members, I will present my part. My part will be on the processes of budget votes in the processes in the committee. And my colleague, the content advisor, will do her presentation on the content and analysis and also the research and analysis of the overview of the sector. I've got this presentation that's more two-page document, members. I'm going to speak on that presentation. It says presentation of the Portfolio Committee on Processing of Budget Books. The purpose of this presentation, members, is to outline the processes to be followed by the Portfolio Committee. That is, Portfolio Committee has a presentation in process in the budget vote. That is our budget vote, both in the budget. Members, I think they were inducted and also have training on the rules of the and the powers of the committee. I will not go there, but my colleagues will speak on those areas. After taking both part budget votes and strategic plan by the executive, the speaker says these relevant documents, to the committee to consider and adopt or within the certain time frame. Any rule 1% requires of committee to report on its work before a debate in the House on particular votes. In this case, members, we have to adopt a report before it is debated in the House. The budget vote for agriculture is scheduled for 16 July. That means next week, a week after next Wednesday. This debate takes place in the extended public committees, EPCs. EPCs members, we can call them as mini houses, because it's an extension of the house, but it has the same powers as the main house has. So if it is not a committee meeting, it's a house sitting, but it's a smaller house sitting that will take decision on behalf of the committee. Committees are required to process budget vote and finalize by 11 July 2014 as per our parliamentary program. Chairperson and honorable members, we have to finalize the report and everything at least on the 11th of July. We have done that, our program is reflecting that. EPCs will start on the 15th of July and Geneva members hours on the 15th of July.
The process, let's go to the committee members now, the members of the committee. The process of project vote, the committee is done in three phases. The first phase is administrative support, the second one is departmental input, and the third one is the committee deliberation and report. And reporting. The first phase of the process members, the administrative support, is to develop the program. We've already done that and approved and approved the report. We think like research analysis and research analysis that will be done, we propose that in the program that will be done on Thursday, members. Because today our focus is only on the research analysis of our bench to prepare for members to know how the sector functions. And then on Thursday we'll then focus on the budget. The second thing, members, is the parliamentary input. We'll then have the overview of the relevant minister. And then after that, on the same day, according to our program, we'll have that on the 8th of July. So we have the overview of the relevant of the minister. And we'll also be briefed by the accounting officer, that is in this case the DG of the department, on the actual details of the budget vote. Members of the committee will scrutinize the budget vote through questions and clarifications. That will be the interaction between the members and the department on that day. The last phase, members, is the committee deliberation and report. After the department has briefed the members, and also the content advisor and the research briefed the members on the budget, so the committee will sit and deliberate on the vote. And remember, this comes to my main responsibility of drafting the report of the committee. We normally do it in consultation with the content advisor. So we'll draft the report of the with observations and possible recommendations that. Recommendation normally comes from the members. They know what they want. So we'll do the observations and possible some of the recommendations we find during the evaluation. A draft record then is drafted from the committee of evaluation for adoption. And then once it was done as a support staff, the report, we take the report in consultation with the chair to the committee for deliberation consideration. So members will feel free to comment that in the report, and then we adopt, the committee adopt the report. Upon adoption, the committee report is published in the AGC. The AGC is a parliamentary chamber, members and offices. It's called announcement table and committee report for debate. In the house, in this case, that will be the EPC. Another very important point that I forgot to put it on the members is that the process, normally the process may include public participation through advertising for commence invitation to specific stakeholders, but because of time frame, I don't think it will be enough time for us to do that as a committee, because we have to finalize this on the 11th. But in normal circumstances, the committee may include public participation when dealing with the budget. Thank you very much, members. Through the chair, I will now hand over to the content advisor and the special to do that.
Maybe we should allow members to ask any questions before we go to the content advice. Can we we allow members to raise any questions or clarification questions? One of the things that I expected the secretary could brief members about the budget, how much we have, so that members can understand what they have. And we should actually help us to have a focus with our work. The second issue is, I think one of the things that we can do to assist members is to distribute the decisions of committee besides the minute, the decisions only, so that we don't get reminded in the meeting that there was this decision that has been taken, there was this decision that has been taken. If we can get office the secretary to distribute those decisions, it will be very helpful for members.
Honourable member.
The first one is exactly what you said, Chair, because I think for us to make a pronouncement before the administration continues, it is not for us to actually know where we are, what actually was in the past, so that we don't pronounce on something that is already in the final stage, and in progress, we want to deal with this matter, and then we waste time, and then we even wrongly budget for it. So to be accepted, I think that we really be asking for this to have a study, because on evidence basis, things I think we need to also have a kind of information in the state. The second one, seeing that we are very out of time and that's not the case, but I think there can be space associations by stakeholders, which is very important, because when I'm looking into the list, and the secretary has mentioned, or other challenges that were left from the sectors and so on. So I think it could be an assumption if we actually call for some issues from such sectors in writing. So that at least we are able to have 10 different of them when we can do it for each.
Okay. Any other input? I take that we accept the presentation and we'll go to the second presentation. Thank you for that.
Yeah, that was to respond to it. In terms of the budget, the information that I had the committee secretary that the session manager for committee is supposed to meet with the house chair to finalize the budget allocation process on Wednesday. So that information will be available after that meeting, members. I will make sure that you members they do have that information after the meeting with the session manager. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we proceed to the second presentation.
Thank you, Jefferson, and good morning, members, and colleagues and visitors. My name is Nobuzo Olam Sanche. I'm the content advisor for the Portfolio Committee, and my background is in agriculture. Just to highlight briefly, my responsibilities as a content advisor is to provide content-specific strategic advice to the committee, which of course is sector-specific issues. This can be in the form of briefing paper or briefing notes as well as oral advice during committee sessions or even during oversight or public hearings. My other role is to also flag out strategic content issues of importance regarding the sector to the committee and also those issues that may need further reflection to facilitate the committee. I also inform the committee program in addition to the standing items that the committee is supposed to deal with. I also inform the program in terms of strategic content specific issues that the committee might need to be briefed on. I'm responsible for developing the concept notes for the strategic planning process of the committee and drafting of the actual strategic document of the committee. And I'm also responsible for the budget review, drafting, developing and drafting the budget review and recommendations committee report, which we will be dealing with in a few months time as part of the budget process. Last year's budget report was also circulated to members last week, supposed to assist with considering the budget next week. And also, with the secretary, we are also assisting the development of the GICASE report, which was also circulated to members for information. In cases where there are public hearings, I'm responsible for summarizing key issues that are raised by stakeholders for consideration by the committee. And also identify capacity issues within the committee and where possible suggest further capacity programs, for example in the form of workshops by sectoral experts. And I also edit all committee documents that will be minutes, correspondence from the committee as well as all committee reports to ensure quality assurance. That's in brief my role as a contact advisor. Members, I would like to highlight that members having been given the actual legacy report last week to look through, it's going to be very helpful going forward, and also given the short period that we are given as a committee to be considering the budget votes without having any interaction with the department or stakeholders in the sector. However, my presentation will be specifically on the sectoral issues, not necessarily all the issues covered in the legacy report since members have that, but those key issues that are important for the development of the sector and also the issues that the committee focused on in the last 5 years. So my presentation is going to be high level. My colleagues, researchers, will also give a sectoral overview and in some cases be more specific, giving examples of the actual departmental interventions and programs. As an intro, the role of agriculture, forestry and fisheries sectors is usually summarized in terms of their contributions to the gross domestic product or GDP of the country, their share in export, earnings, as well as employment, which are usually based on the established commercial entities. These measures can be relatively small in these terms, particularly when compared to other industries in the country, but that does not make the three sectors any less important. While South Africa is food secure at the national level, it is estimated that approximately 3 million households, which represents between 11 and 13 million people, are food insecure. And further 14 million are vulnerable to food insecurity. And food security is one of the key issues that this department is responsible for. Therefore, growing and developing the agricultural sector is the primary channel for achieving household food security. This is a brief presentation outline. I'll give the contextual background regarding the department that is responsible for the three sectors. and also the background on the sector itself and challenges. The department, we all started how far we've come, legislative and policy mandates, and then overview of the sector performance as well as outcomes in focus areas for the department in the last term. Some national priorities, challenges and threats in the achievement of these priorities, opportunities, conclusions and some implications for oversight. The department, in brief, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries was established in 2009. Each establishment was initiated in 2009. With the amalgamation of forestry, which used to relate with the former Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, as well as fisheries, which used to relate with the former Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. The process was then immediate. The forestry integration into the department was much quicker, but with fisheries, I think two proclamations had to be signed in relation to the Marine Living Resources Act, which governs the sector. But the process for fisheries started in July and everything was finalized by the end of the 2009-2010 financial year. Fisheries and forestry were part of agriculture. The amalgamation brought with it some challenges, which included, among others, the alignment of staff amongst the three departments and budget adjustments, largely due to the occupation-specific dispensation. When the forestry sector was introduced into agriculture, they had finished with the OSC. All the personnel went through the OSC process when in agriculture. At the time, it hasn't started. In fisheries, it has been partial in the sense that some of the personnel were already renewed through OSC and some were not. As a result, in fisheries, the personnel who haven't been through the OSG process opted to leave fisheries in agriculture and went to environmental affairs instead. Another challenge with the amalgamation was additional vacancies. Those two sectors, before they were merged into agriculture, they had vacancies. That also increased the vacancy rate of the department. And the department has been struggling to fill some of the vacancies since then. And in response to the measure and the challenges that were associated with it, the department went through a restructuring process, which resulted in the creation of a new organogram and new programs. The whole process was finalized in 2012. During this time, the department didn't have an accounting officer. They used to be acting personnel. And the accounting officer in the form of the Deputy General was appointed in September 2010, but left in June 2012. And since then, the department again went back to having acting personnel as the DG until the current DG was appointed in October 2013. So, this arrangement or instability within the senior management service also contributed to the department starting to fill some of the vacancies. In terms of the sector, It's we have agriculture, forestry and fisheries, which unfortunately are still operating and left. The department hasn't fully integrated into one. Briefly on agriculture, which is mostly commercially orientated. It's usually reported in terms of field crops, which are usually your grains like wheat and horticultural crops, which will include your fruit and vegetables as well as animal production. Agriculture is dualistic. We have an export-oriented commercial sector, well established, and mostly on high potential production areas. On the other hand, we have an under-resourced smallholder sector, mostly concentrated on marginal land in the formal land. So since 2009 and before that, the forecast on the agricultural sector has been on equitable access for the under-resourced sector and also the transformation to ensure their participation. In terms of forestry, which is a small sector in the country, it occupies approximately 1% of the total land area of South Africa. Forestry includes indigenous forests, which are usually protected by law, woodlands, and plantations. The plantations are largely the commercial artificial ones. The indigenous forests and woodlands in particular are very more essential for rural economic development because that's where poor people eat a living in the form of firewood, indigenous fruits and vegetables, and cultural activities, recreation, etc. The plantations are commercial oriented. And are usually derived from alien species like pines and gum trees, etc. For timber, paper, furniture making. In terms of fisheries, we have two subsectors. We have deep water fishing and near shore fisheries. And most of our small scale sector participate in the near shore, and the deep water mostly find the big well-established companies. In fisheries, we also have a highly industrialized commercial sector and the under-resourced small-scale sector. And this small-scale sector, historically, they have limited rights. However, in terms of fisheries, my research colleague for fisheries will expand. The challenges among the sectors, the cross-cutting one is obviously the shortage of skills, particularly the critical skills in agriculture, like your veterinarians, engineers, and agricultural economists, amongst others. And farmer capacity and development support, the focus is on the smallholder sector, and it is mostly undercapacitated with low skills and requires a lot of support. Climate change is also an overarching challenge for all three sectors because they naturally resource based. And agriculture, droughts, floods, and new pests. Are some of the effects or impacts of climate change. And in terms of forestry, regarding climate change, we have incidences of fires increasing as well as pest and diseases. While in fisheries, the challenge might be a negative impact on the reproductive capacity of the species of fish that we have, and in some cases, species migration might occur due to changes in water temperature. The other challenges in agriculture didn't outbreak. Land degradation, particularly in the former homelands where larger population of the smallholder states had concentrated. And also international trade in terms of subsidies for some of our competitors in the international markets, import tariffs, as well as sanitary and phytosanitary measures. In terms of forestry, water licensing is also a challenge, particularly for the developing sector. Due to shortage of skills in forestry, there's also limited research and development, particularly for the inclusion of the smallholder sector in the industry. There's also lack of funding for investment in terms of new plantations. Forest degradation is also another challenge, as well as lack of timber in the country. International trade is also an issue, just like in agriculture, especially it's more about prices and the exchange rate. The rice allocation and the cost of production input, particularly for the smallholder in terms of fuel for the small boats, in cases where they have boats, and also vessel maintenance. What the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries is the department that is mandated at the military sector, and it this through its program. The department has 6 programs. I won't go into the programs into detail. It's just for information purposes, but when we give briefings on Wednesday as the budget, we will go into the program. The department has 6 entities that report directly to the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. In addition, there are 2 other entities that the committee usually interacts with because they deal with issues in the sector. However, these do not report directly to the Minister of Agriculture. Those 2 are the Land and Agricultural Development Bank, or the Land Bank in short. Currently it reports to the National Treasury. And also we have the South African Veterinary Council, which is the professional body for the regulation of the veterinary and paraveterinary sector. The mandate of the department is to address production and consumption in the agriculture, forestry and fisheries sector. This mandate usually changes over the years, as the department is in the process of integrating forestry and fisheries. The mandate of the department is derived from the Constitution, specifically Section 27(1)(b), which states that everyone has the right to have access to sufficient food. The Constitution further states on Section 27(2) and Section 24(b)(3). Section 27 puts an obligation to the state for the realization of the right to sufficient food. And 24B is about sustainable natural resource use and management. The department has 33 acts which are listed at the end of the presentation on Annex 1 that also inform how it carries out its mandate. And most of those acts are ancient, and some of those need to be reviewed. The policy mandate of the department. The department, which was agriculture before the integration of the 2 other sectors, had a strategic plan for agriculture, which was published in 2001, also called the sector plan. And it was the key driving force for agriculture, and its vision was a united and prosperous agricultural sector. given the dualistic nature of agriculture at the time, so the focus has always been on transformation of the sector to ensure inclusion of the previously disadvantaged individual. The sector plan focused on equitable access and participation of PDIs, as mentioned, global competitiveness and profitability for the established commercial sector and new entrants, as well as sustainable resource management. However, the evaluation of the plan was conducted during the 2007-2008 financial year to evaluate the progress of the implementation of the plan in making sure it has achieved its mandated requirements, particularly the tree focus area. However, the evaluation found that progress has been made only on sustainable resource management, and urgent attention was required on equitable access and participation, and these are still focus areas for the sector. Since 2001, when forestry and fisheries were amalgamated into agriculture, the department has been developed an overarching and integrated policy that will inform the sector's functions and long-term plans. In the short term, an integrated growth and development plan was developed, and that was published in 2012. However, it was never tabled in Parliament. And during that process of the IGDP, and last year in 2013, an industrial action, agricultural policy action plan, was developed. And both, and it is believed that the ACAP is still in the process of being developed. So both policy instruments have not been presented in Parliament yet. So that's one of the issues for the committee to follow on. However, the department carries out its mandate through various national instruments, amongst those the government related outcomes. In this regard, the department contributes to outcome 4, which is decent employment or job creation, outcome 7, rural development and food security, and outcome 10, which is natural resource protection and management. In addition, the department's mandate is also informed by other national policy frameworks, which include the medium-term strategic framework. The current one is still being developed, the industrial policy action plan of the Department of Trade and Industry, and the new growth path from the Economic Development Department and the National Development Plan. And also the department's response to annual State of the Nation addresses. In terms of the performance of the sector, given the challenges that have been presented, agriculture currently, this fluctuates. This is a conservative figure, depending where you get your statistics, but it's approximately 3% contribution to the GDP of the country. However, if forward and backward linkages to the economy through the agribusiness value chain is considered, the contribution of the agricultural sector increases to around 12% its contribution to the GDP. Agriculture is a sector, and these figures are based on the commercial sector largely. To employment, the contribution is approximately 5%, which is plus minus 140,000 people that are directly involved in employed in agriculture. The contribution of forestry to the GDP is about 1.2%, and the sector employs approximately 7,000 workers directly. In addition, 50,000 indirectly from sectors that are related to the forestry sector, value chain. In terms of fisheries, it's about 0.57 to GDP, and approximately these are statistics from the department. And the fisheries sector employs approximately 27,000 workers directly. And in addition, another 100,000 indirectly. The department, in terms of food security, which is outcome 7, the focus here is on policy instruments. And nationally, we have an integrated food and security strategy that was developed in 2002. And for a long period, it remained an overarching and well-intentioned strategy that was premised on the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization's definition of food security. And it was also linked to the achievement of the First Millennium Development Goal to halve poverty or people that are food insecure by half in 2015. However, the IFSS has not been effectively implemented, because it's supposed to be an intergovernmental strategy. So the implementation has not been well coordinated to realize maximum impact across all sectors. The challenges are the department involved are working inside. In terms of food security, besides the IFSS, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries had no specific policy, but it addressed food security by providing support through conditional grants, such as the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program. With time, members, I can't go into detail, but I'm sure by the end of the term or even the month, you will know a lot more about CAMP. It's one of the programs in terms of smallholder support. And even the Latino program, the focus was on household food insecurity. So this one provided support to subsistence producers. And also various other programs, depending on what the priority for a particular financial year or in NTF, so in NTF one. Recently, the food and nutrition security policy, that's the new one, was approved by cabinet in September 2013. The implementing agencies in terms of this policy is our Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, as well as the Department of Social Development. Through this policy, the department has the Feed the Sala initiative, or the Feed the Sala food and nutrition program. The focus of Feed the Sala being addressing household food insecurity. The policy and Feed the Sala program has also not been presented to the committee yet. And the monitoring and evaluation of the conditional grants that speak to smallholder support in terms of food security, as well as the implementation of the new policy, will be very essential, and also to get a clarification on the role of each department in the implementation of this policy. In terms of outcome 4, which is job creation, agriculture is labor intensive and is one of the sectors that has the ability to absorb unskilled and semi-skilled labor. A President Ross is not identified, has been identified as a key job cover in the New Gold Park, as well as in the NDP. And in addition to private sector jobs, the department also contributes to job creation, mostly through the expanded public rights program, namely the land care program, which seeks to sustainable resource use and management. And here we have rehabilitation programs in agriculture and also in forestry. There's also a million trees program under forestry and working for fisheries, for the fisheries sector. Those are all EPWP programs. And so the challenge here is the sustainability of those jobs because usually they are short-term contracts. And there's also a need for the monitoring and evaluation of their impact, and also in terms of skills capacity when the contracts of the people who are employed in this program expire. In terms of outcome 7, which is rural development, the Department of the Agriculture Sector is considered as the backbone of the rural economy and the driver of rural economic development. Given this, the department was given a lead role in the implementation, in driving and the implementation of the agrarian transformation pillar of the CRDP. The CRDP is the Comprehensive Rural Development Program of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, to Land Reform. And in terms of agriculture, the focus for the CRDP has to be on post-settlement support for land reform beneficiaries, and also development of rural enterprises for the tree sectors in rural areas. The challenge has been intergovernmental relations. There has been no formal collaboration between the two departments in terms of implementing the CRDP. However, through its oversight visits, the committee found variations, the previous committee found variations amongst provinces. There were cases where the two departments were working in collaboration, and that's where you see commendable progress. But in most cases, the land reform, this process support has also been identified as one of the issue, lack of it has been identified as one of the issues that resulted in the failure of some land reform projects. Where you will find that the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, instead of complementing each other and to maximize the utilization of the limited resources that each department has, they were competing against each other. You find both departments implementing agricultural projects. Another issue with rural development and specifically under land reform mandate is the role of mentorships and strategic partnership on these land reform projects. Some of the oversight activities found that the mentorship programs as well as strategic partnerships benefited the mentors and the partners at the expense of the beneficiaries. This is one of key issues that the committee, probably in collaboration with the PC on rural development and land reform, might have to look to. Because to ensure the sustainability of the land reform project, the beneficiaries need to be capacitated. They have to know everything about the business that they are involved in. And also in terms of benefit, where a business is operating at a commercial scale of revenue, what are the benefits? Some of the cases the committee found that the beneficiaries know nothing about the business, but rather the employees in the program, where the strategic partner or the mentor is running a business. So at the end of the contract of the partnership or the mentorship, the beneficiaries are back to square one because no skills capacity or capacity building is taking place. In terms of outcome 10, which is sustainable use of natural resources, as already mentioned, land care plays a key role in terms of rehabilitation of degraded agricultural land and woodlands in the case of forestry, and also through land care, they are jobs for clearing AM and invasive plants. Additionally, there's also a green program under forestry. A green program includes reforestation of degraded or rehabilitated areas and in some cases reforestation to increase the area under plantation. In terms of some of the national priorities, one of the mandates is to develop and expand agro-processing. My research colleague can expand further on this one and also explain the entire value chain process. When we talk about agro-processing, it's not necessarily about just turning fruit into juice, but the entire value chain to maximize job creation opportunities from the tree or from the ground to the shop. That's the entire value chain, the processes involving people as agriculture is labor intensive. In terms of agriculture, food processing has been identified in this regard, and for forestry, development of industries for the smallholder players in terms of paper, timber, and furniture making. Aquaculture under fisheries was also identified, and also under aquaculture, agro-processing plays a role in terms of job creation. These were mandates. These are mandates under the IPEP. Specifically for the committee to note, under aquaculture, the IPEP emphasizes or prioritizes a collaboration between the Department of Trade and Industry and Brands in South Africa to develop a campaign on Kabeljau, that's a species of fish, or Dusky Cob by an English common name. This is to be done by the third quarter of this year, that is by the end of December. That's one of the things for the committee to follow up on. Further, in terms of national priorities, to address household food insecurity, the sector is intended to have 300,000 households participating in smallholder schemes by 2015, and also 500 jobs to be created from the agricultural sector. Specifically, 145,000 jobs from agro-processing. This is by 2020. This is a new growth path mandate or target. And in terms of agro-processing, the focus that has been identified by the NGP is the wine and food industries, for example. Further, the latest, 1 million new jobs have to be created by agriculture by 2020. And agro-processing again has been identified as a job driver. and this includes agriculture and related sectors. And the NDP says that emphasizes infrastructure investment in this regard for agriculture, irrigation systems, specifically in the Makati Fields and the Inzimu River Basin in the Eastern Cape. Progress has been made in terms of the Makati Fields in the past term. The government has debated that irrigation scheme. But the committee needs to follow up monitoring on the impact and the use. Because from previous oversight visits to the northwest, where the Tawong irrigation scheme was also degraded, there were challenges regarding the use of the scheme by the smallholder sector due to lack of resources and capacity, the maintenance of the infrastructure, among other things. As a result, some of the beneficiaries of the scheme were renting out their portions of the scheme to commercial farmers. The NDP also suggests that by 2030 we should have a food surplus, and 33% of that surplus is supposed to come from the small scale sector. Given all these national priorities and mandates, and the other challenges that have been previously mentioned regarding the sector, there are internal challenges and threats that need to be addressed, that we have to, as a committee, put more focus on, and this includes the long-standing ones, technical and financial support. Technical support is supposed to be provided by extension services as well as other sectoral experts. The accessibility and the state of extension services has been under question for a while. There's a shortage in some areas. For example, in some cases you will find that one extension officer is servicing a ward. And historically, an extension officer used to serve a village. And so there are areas where communities don't even know who their extension services officers are or where to get the service. And also, lack of skills have been of these extension services where they are visible. Extension officers where they are visible has also been mentioned as a result. They cannot give the kind of technical support that is required, particularly by smallholder farmers. Another issue in terms of technical support is that the extension service is currently only for agriculture. The smallholder producers in the forestry and fisheries don't have similar service. To respond to some of the challenges within the extension services, particularly the lack of skills, an extension recovery program was introduced, and its focus has been on the upgrading of qualifications for officers, as well as training like ICT skills and geographic information systems, business management, etc. Those are short-term training courses. The challenges in the extension service continue. And currently, there's a national policy on extension and advisory services that seeks to review the extension service, how it's working, the shortcomings, weaknesses, and strengths, if there are any, or making examples or taking from experience where the service has been working well. The policy is still in progress. The department has a dedicated website that provides progress on how far the policy process is. In terms of finance, we We have a number of different programs that are supposed to assist the small holder sector in terms of financial resources. There's CASP, again, is one of those finance options in addition to other pillars that CASP is supposed to speak to in terms of farmer support. There's also MAFISA, and there's also the Agri-BEE Fund, which my colleague from the research unit will speak to. The challenge in terms of accessing finance has been a continuing problem for the small business sector. And also, this is linked in cases where the visibility of extension services is poor, because the extension officers are supposed to provide the kind of information and the program, the support program that the government has for the local sector. Also, the finance is limited. For example, MAFISA, I think the maximum grant is 100,000. And if we talk of job creation and developing the small border sector to the level of the commercial scale, 100,000 is in much, and cost is even less. There's also a general shortage of critical skills, as has been previously mentioned, vets and others. Another internal challenge is the lack of information on the smallholder sector. Most of the agricultural statistics are based on the established commercial sector. There's no baseline or a dedicated database for information on the smallholder sector, for example, in numbers, in terms of, and also their spatial location. I can't off my head say how many smallholder farmers, for example, we have in the country, or smallholder forests of small scale, or there might be an estimate in terms of fisheries, but in terms of agriculture, it's a challenge. And also the database, it will make things easier if it will also have the spatial location and land access, productive or cooperative advantage, reserve needs, and categories of these small holders. So we have some systems we can imagine which are under the small holders. This information is very important for government interventions. Otherwise, it becomes hard to evaluate progress in terms of program implementation, and also to assess the impact of such interventions when you don't have the baseline. Another challenge is intergovernmental relations that are standing one. It's a serious one. There's a lack of coordination amongst departments on cross-cutting issues, and example has been made of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. And this hinders progress. As the identification of activities with limited resources. Another challenge is poor investment. The focus now with government is the development of the smallholder sector. Yet there's poor investment on research and development in general. The grant that is given to the Agricultural Research Council barely covers salaries, let alone operations. As a result, the ARC, which has always been commercially oriented, is still largely servicing the commercial sector because they have to charge for their services. So the commercial sector can afford to pay when they need specific research on certain issues that affect the industry. But the smallholder sector cannot, which can barely support themselves, don't have the resources to pay for research. So in this case, government has to come into play. And given this poor investment on research and development, the research on smallholder sector is limited. and most of it is done by academic institutions towards master's or PhD qualifications. On the issue of research and development, in the last past two financial years, the department has developed a service level agreement with the ARC, so they can identify key areas for research intervention, specifically for the small object sector. The committee can follow up on those agreements and what kind of research activities have they identified. There are also external challenges that the industry or the department have no control over. These include climate change. The climate change has a huge impact on all three sectors. And therefore, changes in production areas is inevitable. In this regard, the department has to be, and the industry has to be proactive. The department has to assist the industry, particularly the small water sector, in terms of adaptation. There is a risk and vulnerability map that has been developed by the ARC and the CSIR, which is the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, that shows areas. The CSIR does a lot of research on climate change, so these maps are continually updated and they show areas of risk as changes in climate, okay, the country, for example, the western part of the country will get drier while the interior and the eastern plateau will be getting wetter. So how those changes will affect the industry and how can small scale farmers or producers adapt to the changes? And also how can the department use those changes to their comparative advantage. Also, there are natural disasters which can, and disease outbreaks can be linked or not linked to climate change at all, but those are some of the regional factors. And my colleagues will speak more on this issue as well. There's inclusion on agricultural land. Mining is one of those, particularly in the high potential areas in Mpumalanga. Fracking in the Karoo as proposed, and largely urban development on productivity, housing estates, golf estates on agricultural land. This issue is an IGR issue, it's intergovernmental relations, and it's still a challenge. And the impact of these on water sources as well as grazing land. My colleague will also speak more on these. However, I would like to highlight that in the number of bills that the department proposed to bring to the committee in this term and also during the current financial year, the protection and development of agricultural land bill, that it is still being developed, and we hope it will play a key role in addressing this challenge. The international trade policies, we have no control over those. The agricultural, our farmers compete, particularly in agriculture, with farmers, especially in Europe, who are subsidized. And however, the commercial industry has adapted well to the open market and is still highly competitive. And the result being the economies of scale, where they are consolidating smaller units into large units that's how they can stay competitive. Another challenge is the sanitary and phytosanitary measures, in brief members, these are plant health related issues. The restrictions and the regulations that other countries impose for exports, we have no control over those, but as a country we have we must be able to meet all those industries. And this will be a huge challenge for the small order sector. And commodity prices as well on exports and competition, particularly from newcomers. In this regard, there are marketing bills, one of those being the marketing of agricultural products and the marketing product agency bill, and which we hope will be coming to the committee soon as well. These are under development, going the cabinet processes, and so we hope these will assist in addressing some of the challenges, particularly for the newcomers to the export industry. Despite all those challenges and threats, there are opportunities given the national priorities and mandates as outlined in the new growth path and the NDP. The short term being 5 years in my definition. 2014, for example, in commemoration of the Comprehensive Africa Agricultural Development Program, which has been in existence for 10 years, the African Union has therefore identified or pledged 2014 as the African Year of Agriculture and Food Security. And the United Nations has also called 2014 the International Year of Family Planning. So the family farming. So the focus here is still on the smallholder sector. So the department, unfortunately, on 8 years, 2014 is almost over, but the department surely must have had programs in this regard, because that's an opportunity to sell the agriculture in a way, to sell agriculture as a sector. The NGP and the NDP agro-processing, there are so many opportunities there if we can address some of the shortcomings that have been identified, and prioritizing the entire value chain, the value addition, sorry, across the entire value chain, where nothing is wasted or thrown away. This is very important for job creation as well. We can increase the area under production. In this case, using spatial mapping and analysis, the Institute for Soil, Climate and Water of the ARC is involved in this kind of activity, and the spatial analysis of agriculture, forestry and fisheries resources was supposed to be done by the ARC and I think the CSR and other agencies. Particularly for the development of the smallholder sector, to identify productive potential in this sector. The committee also need to follow up on the development of that mapping tool. In terms of forestry, there's afforestation and reforestation. Those are ongoing programs of the department in terms of forestry as well. Infrastructure development in the short term, irrigation has been emphasized in the NDP, but in terms of infrastructure, there's also the mechanization program of the department, and my colleague from the research unit will also expand on this one. In terms of infrastructure or mechanization on farm, on and off farm is important, because the focus has largely been on farm, that is tractor, farming implements, farming sheds, etc. Meanwhile, the roads leading to these protection areas have been largely ignored, and national offences amongst other things, or even marketing facilities. Agro-processing again, the facilities for sorting, for marketing, or even for selling some of the produce. across all three letters. And one issue here is also the provision of security, how that will be addressed, because there are cases where, particularly in irrigation systems, vandalism has been identified. And also lack of maintenance also resulted in this, some of this infrastructure being run down before time. Comprehensive project support is also one of the opportunities for the department or the sector to make inroads into the national priority. And the previous committee has called this a one-stop shop facility, where all the support support tools that the smallholder sector needs can be found in one place. Technical support, finance, capacity building, that's the training of farmers or beneficiaries, and also provision of markets and access to markets. In this regard, intergovernmental relations and public-private sector partnerships will play a key role. The commercial sector has well-established commodity groups, some of which are already involved in this public-private partnership. In the long term, the CADEF, which is a comprehensive agriculture development program, in a nutshell, it's the program of NEPAD, which emerged from the 2003 Maputo Declaration on Agriculture and Food Security. The declaration in terms of food security specified that a minimum of 10% of national budget must be allocated to the agricultural sector in order to increase productivity by at least 6%, and a deadline of 2008. And the declaration was signed by all heads of state of AU member countries. However, in terms of South Africa, although we are the student touch in the Maputo Declaration and we are also housing the NEPAD Secretariat, the uptake of the response to the Maputo Declaration and also the uptake of CADEC as a program has been very slow. The department did not follow up on the program until 2011, after continuous engagement on the subject matter by the previous committee. However, progress has been made since then, and the CADEC compact is under development, and in February this year, the department reported to the previous committee that they have finalized consultation with province in this regard. So the combat must be close to signage by now. In terms of the 10% budget allocation, South Africa, as previously mentioned, because of these forward and backward linkages across the agricultural region, and all these different departments that get funding from their votes for agricultural specific activities, when those are combined, they might be more than 10%. However, we don't have a monitoring tool to check those. For example, rural development and land reform, they have funding for agricultural related activities. Department of Trade and Industry, both in agriculture and in fisheries, they have sector-related activities. Social development in terms of food security, they are involved in agricultural production. So there's a need for monitoring and consolidation of the actual funding allocations of these different programs. And which can lead to the actual contribution or investment by the national government to agriculture. In terms of the uptake of CADEP, South Africa might be a middle-income country that is not depending on agriculture. However, as is the case with some low-income countries in the continent, however, because the agricultural sector is dualistic, where we have an advanced and established commercial sector, but we have a poorly resourced smallholder sector that needs a lot of attention. So, which makes CADEP very important in this regard. And the long-term opportunities also include increase, which is also one of the NDP objectives. Increase the number of commercial entities in agriculture. So the CADEP Compact development, it's got various stages with time. Members will be given a specific brief on the CADEP, what it is about and what it entails and what are the opportunities when the country signs a compact and adopts it. Because there are so many institutions, both at national, continental, and international level that are involved. And also, there's an opportunity for regional support markets. In terms of agriculture, the identification of opportunities for new and niche markets. For example, the olive oil production is small in South Africa, is still under development, and that is based in the Western Cape, and olive oil is becoming one of those high-value products. So the prices and the demand is likely to increase in the future. My colleague will speak more on disease outbreak, but there's an issue with the transplant spot that has resulted in some of our exports being our citrus exports being banned in some EU markets. So there's an opportunity for the department to assist the industry, particularly the smallholder sector, to identify new markets in the region and in the continent. In terms of agriculture, one other opportunity that I see in the long term is the development of livestock. In most cases, most of the programs are focused on crop development. There's very little focus on livestock development. However, there are some programs by the entities of the department, but there is a huge potential because that's where large numbers of livestock in the country reside, in the smallholder sector. And there's a lot of potential there. For example, I'll make an example with given that we have an established commercial sector. The National Wool Growers Association has a public-private partnership program for the development of commercial sheep flocks in the Eastern Cape to improve wool quality, because when it comes to agricultural products, particular animal products, it's not necessarily about where it comes from, it's about, for example, with wool. What they sell, what they export is South African wool, and nobody knows where that comes from. Then wool comes from, wool is wool. And so they combine, so the National Wool Growers Association, you saw the advantages in number in terms of the smallholder sector, and it's assisting wool and their development so they can make money out of wool production. The same can be done for beef, for example. I know for the fact that in some areas in the Eastern Cape, when the commercial sector is in shortage, when it can't meet its export or its demand supply for beef, they do buy from communal areas. They do buy cattle from communal areas and put them in feedlot for 2 to 3 weeks, and by the end of that 3 weeks, that beef is ready any other for the market. And so there's potential there, and the department can leverage programs like that of the World Growers Association at the length of the term. There's also potential for an economic in the long term due to consumer demand or consumer processes. In terms of forestry, it's more on the actual processing side. And in terms of developing sawmills and furniture making specifically, this is very important for job creation locally instead of importing trans-living timber or furniture. We can develop skills locally, particularly for schools and other government agencies. The rehabilitation of old plantations, the opportunity, and also the development of enterprises from non-forest projects. Marula being the key example, commercially, honey, and mushroom production, amongst others. In terms of fisheries, aquaculture expansion, and new fisheries. Education for oversight. To be able to fulfill the departmental mandate and to achieve the objectives of the NDP in particular, focused leadership and institutional capability of the department is key, including its entities. In this regard, the committee must pay particular attention on the development of the long term and integrated sector policy that is based on experience and evidence to ensure that it resolves changes in administration. The NDP in this regard can be used as a roadmap and a blueprint. And also the development of the long-term sector policy will also ensure full integration of forest and fisheries into agriculture. There's also a need to address skills shortages across all three sectors, including extension capacity. This is very essential for the smallholder sector, and also the department in this regard can also include the academic institutions that train these professionals. And the community monitoring and evaluation, this will come out through the strategic planning process of the committee, but very important in terms of monitoring the policies, legislation, and programs of the department with respect to their development, and the processes, the cabinet process, how long it takes, and their hearing in parliament, implementation. In this case, implementation plans are very essential. Some of the legislation and policies that have come before parliament did not have implementation plans, and this also speaks to resource availability in terms of budgeting and also how the resources are used to ensure that these policies and programs are implemented. Committee can also make use of the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. They do report on departments in this regard, as well as the Auditor General and other tools. Intergovernmental relationships have been highlighted. Coordination on cross-cutting issues or mandates. In this regard, the committee can proactively collaborate with other portfolio and relevant committees in Parliament to ensure when addressing or getting briefings from the departments, to seek clarity on responsibilities where they are shared mandates, and also to ensure resource mobilization and efficient use of state resources against competing priorities. And finally, unless agriculture reaches a degree of commercialization, which is what the NGP postulates for the development of the smallholder sector, not only about immediate household food security, but turning those Mongolia Industries as a commercial enterprise. So, further realization of this, the impact of agricultural growth on food security and poverty alleviation is likely to be limited. In this regard, the promotion of public-private partnerships to leverage on the established commercial sector is key. The NDP has examples and also a roadmap on how some of these can be achieved. And the CADEP program can play a very key role in assisting the country and the sector as well. The committee also needs to oversee policy mandated development and comprehensive support of the smallholder sector. And we need specific policies that address some of the issues to be able to address the transformation objectives not only in agriculture but in forestry and fisheries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was a marathon, but it was worth it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether members want to strike late and come back for fishery and more issues on. It will be expanded by research. Just right here to me.
Are we going to engage after the other?
Yes, we are going to engage after this because they are interrelated. Okay.
Thank you. So for instance, I was also decided to